Stephen Vladeck is a professor of law. He's the associate dean for scholarship at American University Washington's College of Law. And Stephen, you've been a great teacher. Thank you so much.
No, Tony, thanks for having me.
Well, we've got a menagerie of cases to talk about. Let's jump on board this GPS deal because it was a big, big story.
Yeah, it's a big story, and it's a potentially big decision, although I think how big remains to be seen. You know, the court unanimously held that it is a search whenever the police, or at least in this case, when the police put a physical GPS tracker on this drug dealer's car and used it to follow him around, basically, for the better part of a month. Now, the court was unanimous that it was a search. They split as to why. So five justices, led by Justice Scalia, held that it was a search because they actually physically put the GPS device on this guy's car. Four different justices, led by Justice Alito, said, no, it's not because it was a physical intrusion. It's because of how long they did it. It was because it was a real invasion of privacy. And so at least in this case, that distinction didn't make a difference because both were true. But whether that's going to be true in the future, whether this decision is going to apply to using our iPhones or other mobile devices where the police don't have to actually trespass on our property counts as a search, I think remains to be seen.
Stephen, in a case you and I talked about some months ago, what about cameras in the court?
Yeah, I mean, so the Supreme Court has been, you know, very resistant to allowing cameras into the courtroom for its arguments. You know, I think it's much more likely that if this is going to come up, it's going to come up through legislation than through litigation, because it's hard to see how, you know, anyone could ever actually sue the justices for cameras in the courtroom. But it's interesting. They're basically the last, you know, institution in American government that doesn't allow its proceedings to be televised. Where we are today is the court will allow audio tapes of its oral arguments to be released to the public. But they're worried, you know, most of them are worried that if they actually allowed video in the courtroom, what you'd start seeing is you start seeing the justices basically politicking for the cameras rather than doing their job. You know, my own view is that's a little bit overblown, but I'm not sure we're going to see movement on that anytime soon.
Stephen, any word on how the justices are doing with Obamacare?
Well, you know, the arguments are going to come up towards the end of March. And so I think, you know, we'll be in a better position to evaluate that then. The big development this week is that the justices refused to request to hear oral argument on the question of whether Justice Kagan should recuse from this case. So it looks like, you know, for all intents and purposes, this is going to be a full court that decides the case when, in fact, they hear oral arguments at the end of March. You know, as you know, Tony, they decided to have 5 hours of oral argument, which is very unusual. And so I think, you know, it's going to be a zoo, but we've got about another 2 months before we see just how crazy a zoo it is. What's going on right now is you have the various parties filing their briefs and sort of getting all the arguments ready for those oral arguments at the end of March.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of cases that have come up in Michigan, just to get your legal take on them. First of all, there has been a court that will allow some halfway houses that may hold some pedophiles, convicted pedophiles in the area, and there's a lot of people that are somewhat in an uproar about that. They don't want those people to be allowed to live in the area. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, this is a tricky question. I mean, the Supreme Court has now said a couple different times that states have the power to, you know, control the circumstances of convicted sex offenders even after they've served their sentences. So, you know, that includes the power to recommit them if the state can prove that they're a danger to the community. But it also includes the power to try to rehabilitate them and try to reintroduce them into the community. So, you know, it's a tricky question. It's not, there isn't really a federal constitutional aspect to it. It's much more a question of Michigan state law. You know, I think that really just boils down to politics. Is there enough support in Michigan for allowing, you know, these halfway houses in the community, or, you know, if they're not going to go into your community, where are they going to go? I think this is one of the trickier things we've seen as both the federal and state governments have gotten more aggressive with regard to, you know, sex offenders over the last 15 years. It's really, it's a quintessential NIMBY problem, because if you're not going to allow these folks in your backyard, you know, where are they going to go? I think that's one of the trickier political things we've seen in this area.
Stephen, any other cases that the Supreme Court is looking at that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, I think we're going to start seeing some very big decisions coming down the pipeline from cases that were argued in the fall. So, you know, some of these include whether private beneficiaries of Medicaid have the power to enforce the statute when states like California violate it. There's a big case about whether Congress or the president gets to control our foreign policy when it comes to whether Jerusalem is actually part of Israel or not. It's a very small issue, but how the court decides that case could have big ramifications. You know, the Supreme Court's going to hear pretty shortly the big Arizona immigration case about whether Arizona has the power to take all these aggressive measures to punish or otherwise deter individuals who are out of status from living and working in Arizona. You know, obviously that could have massive consequences for what states and local governments do vis-a-vis immigration. But also one that we haven't talked about before, the Supreme Court's about to decide whether it wants to hear a new case out of Texas challenging the University of Texas's affirmative action program. You know, we saw, as you know, Tony, the University of Michigan was the party to the big affirmative action decisions about 9 years ago. This is going to be the court's first opportunity since then to decide when race-based affirmative action is constitutional, and there have been some fairly significant changes in membership since those decisions 9 years ago. So if the court takes these cases called Fisher versus Texas, you know, that could be a very big deal.
Any chance that Roe v. Wade could be changed?
Well, you know, that's always a possibility. I think the reality is the court has gone so far to sort of tweak the structure of its abortion jurisprudence. So, you know, the rule today, which stems to a 1992 case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey, is that states cannot place an undue burden on a woman's right to have an abortion, at least in the first trimester. But states have gone so far to place various burdens on that right that I think, you know, the court has already allowed for a lot of wiggle room. We've seen, Tony, you know, especially in the news the last couple of weeks, some more aggressive measures. So, for instance, there's been some movement to have states pass legislation that bars all abortions after the 20th week of pregnancy. You know, I think those cases could end up in the Supreme Court. But without a change in membership, I think this court is not about to overrule Roe. I think they'll just continue to do what they've done, which is minimize it through the undue burden test. It's a very complicated area of law, but I think, you know, the justices are, at least for the moment, relatively content with where they are.
Stephen Vladeck is a professor of law and associate dean for scholarship at American University Washington College of Law. As always, Stephen, thanks so much.
Thanks, Tony. Good to talk to you.